Hello, my name is Amelia Andersdotter. I am a member of the European Parliament on behalf of the Swedish Pirate Party. I was elected in June of 2009 in the European elections, but for various bureaucratic reasons, I was not installed as a member until December of last year. So I'm soon celebrating my first year as a European deputy and making some experiences, maybe with the first impressions of what it means to work in the European Parliament and in the Brussels political climate. I actually talked in Austria once before, but then in Linz at Ars Electronica in 2010 about what I called then post-democratic systems, the EU being a part of those post-democratic systems. It had to do with the ACTA agreement, anti-counterfeiting trade agreement, that I think many of you may be aware was rejected by the European Parliament in a relatively spectacular political process that occurred this spring. The idea of a post-democratic system is essentially that you transfer power from the elected representatives and put them in systems which aren't democratically controlled. So trade agreements at an international level would be an example, because normally we, and I meant at that time also, normally in the democratic system, we work under the assumption that we have a separation of powers. So there's a legislative power, which is filled with elected representatives that make decisions, which are then executed by a government or the executive. And then you also have a judicial system, which the purpose of which is to make judgment or resolve conflicts and disputes between different parties in society in a way that is least conflictful to everyone involved. But with current modern trade agreement mechanisms, we're seeing very, very detailed provisions in trade agreement at the global level, which are negotiated by representatives of governments. They also very commonly include their own arbitration systems, which are meant to solve disputes between business parties in one country and the government of a different party. And the results of these arbitration systems apply also to the legislation of the country which is being attacked by this. And the decisions made by these bodies are binding on the nations. So this is clearly not an arbitration system or a kind of court system interpreting rules which is under any direct influence by parliamentary institutions. ACTA would have been a particularly bad example of this because it is very, very detailed legislation at an international level with its own arbitration system built into the agreement. But we already have these arbitration systems also in the World Trade Organization, for instance, or in basically every bilateral trade agreement that is being struck by the European Union at this time. The elected officials, of course, have very minimal influence over what happens in a trade negotiation because it is the executive, or in the European Union, the executives of the member states that set up the negotiation mandates together. During the negotiation process, in order to ensure that the people that are negotiating don't have to give up their positions, much is kept in transparent, and particularly the publicly elected institutions are kept out of the negotiation processes, which was a particular problem also in the ACTA, which the European Parliament reacted to very strongly in, for instance, 2010, but which actually is consistent throughout all trade negotiations, that the really important documents which describe the kind of political intention of the people negotiating the agreement actually isn't very open, and it's not open for discussion either by the publicly elected representatives or by anyone else. My maybe changed perspective since I came to the European Parliament as an elected member in December last year is, however, that Europe suffers from a much bigger problem than the general problem of pushing political power into the arbitration courts of free trade agreements. And it's that the European Parliament, being a system of 27 member states that conjunctively set up the negotiation mandates for these trade agreements, actually suffers from a kind of double-sided lack of democracy. So on the one hand, not all of the member states benefit from the same type of international relationships with the outside world. So, and also inside of the European Union, the member states are trying to keep each other under check. So what happens with, for instance, in the digital markets, which I work with a lot, is we know that in Europe we have a big problem with copyright, not only because citizens are complaining about copyright being a big problem on the digital markets, but also because companies are complaining and because we have a system which systematically favors enforcement over accessibility and usability of creative materials. These rules are different per member state. So we have 27 different legal regimes where different types of exceptions and limitations to the copyright framework applies. In the United States, this wouldn't be a problem because they have one fair use regime which applies equally over all the American territory. And the American territory already is a quite large market and quite large kind of audience to direct yourself to. In Europe, we don't have that. If you move across the border into Hungary from here, or into Germany, or into Italy, you're in a completely different legal system, and you have no way of knowing what will be permissible, what will count as a private copy, for instance. In the Netherlands, you're allowed to download stuff from the net because it counts as a private copy. In Sweden, this is a criminal activity. And the legal situation, like what degree of criminality you receive per member state, you have no idea as an end user, nor as a company, what will apply per member state. So the only effective way you have of acting is by disrespecting the law, and this is a very unsound legal system. But at the same time, we don't have these devices included in the international trade system either. So even if you condone the fact that the democratic power over these over this legislation is moved into international fora which are outside of the democratic system, the issues that we have in the European market aren't getting dealt with in the forum of these negotiations. So we're kind of like doubly fucked. We're unable to solve the problems domestically that we have on the European market, and the international trade agreements give us a very strict enforcement system. So in a legal system which you cannot respect because it is completely arbitrary, you're getting awfully punished for not respecting it, which is highly unreasonable. Now, what I also discovered in the European institutions, of course, that now that industry actors are also opening up their eyes to this. So in the ACTA debates, we had temporary allies kind of from the telecommunications industry that didn't want to become liable for what their users are doing, emerging online services industries that also performed a lot of lobbying kind of against the agreement. And they are very keen on kind of setting a new tone specifically in the copyright agenda, but in the institution of the European Parliament, there is no desire to acknowledge this as a kind of general political, as a general political topic. Like it's very, very difficult to introduce any kind of new ideas. Of course, anyone who thinks about copyright in the digital world, where there's like you have very few borders between users and companies, and what kind of interactions can take place. Anyone who thinks about this for longer than 5 minutes will reach the conclusion that you need to change something in the flexibilities framework, that there is something which is not quite right when users feel compelled not to respect the law. But you cannot introduce at the same time like new concepts, because people are, I guess, afraid of accepting new concepts into their political rhetoric. And my lasting impression of the last 9 months actually is that the European Parliament is very much a place of fear, and a fear of acknowledging new ideas, or a fear of seeking allies, a fear of giving up your positions, a fear of, a lot of fear goes into this institution, and a lot of fear of feeling the wrong thing, or doing the wrong thing. And this fear applies to the way we try to regulate industry. Like there's an obsessive fear of over-regulating industry. Of course, nobody wants to over-regulate industry. Like we want to regulate industry the right way. We don't want to over-regulate them, but we don't want to under-regulate them either. But there's a fear of over-regulation, because if you make a regulation which in any way touches anything, chances are that you might go wrong. And then you will be held accountable, or even worse, responsible for this legislation that went too far or that didn't go far enough. So the standard excuse is that you don't regulate at all, or you make something which is like a very weak regulation out of fear of being held accountable for making a mistake. In the case of flexibilities frameworks, I think the general fear is that you would be perceived as not supporting the upholding of the law, maybe, that you would be afraid that you would bring into the flexibilities discussion something which doesn't belong there, or it seems very technical. The interest groups that are normally covered by exceptions and limitations in copyright generally have very low financial power, so they don't very often get the chance to interact with their representatives. And therefore, I think a lot of people are simply uncertain about what the scope of supporting the concept of exceptions and limitations could entail. Also, there's like the institution in general speaks very warmly about markets and numbers. Like, I've been watching the American election campaign now also, where they use a lot of numbers, but anything that can be quantified in the European Parliament is essentially good, like quantifying the amount of jobs that we can lose or the amount of jobs that we can create and the amount of money we can put in the trade balance and the exact amount of contribution in percentage that an online service would provide to the GDP, regardless of whether it's based on the American market or the European market. As long as there's a number, everyone feels comfortable. And this, I think, brings a very kind of economic thinking into the political process, which makes us unable to see the exceptions and limitations framework or the copyright framework also as a way of dealing with communications between people, or like the online world is dealing with communications between people. The copyright conflict is, for instance, discussed in terms of Google versus Warner, which is kind of unfair because the majority of the actors that are affected by that conflict are users who don't have anything to do with Google or with Warner's, and Facebook doesn't represent me when they go on an event in the European Parliament, even if I have an account on Facebook. They clearly do not represent 900 million users. They represent the kind of business entity that allows for these 900 million users to interact, but this is a nuance which is never brought into Brussels because I think it's not easy enough to quantify, maybe in terms of economic gains. I feel quite like disheartened by the European Parliament experience, not because I don't think, like, ACTA clearly shows that we can change things as a European people if we interact with our public representation. But I think it has to be seen as an exceptional case. Like, the only reason that it succeeded at that particular time was because everyone was reacting at the same time. And the idea that we would be able to stage these pan-European debates again without getting the help from, in this case, American entities like Wikipedia and Google, who started off, I think, a lot of the European protests by acting at a global level against legislation introduced in the American Congress. It's very highly unlikely. But there is still some things that give me hope for the future, which is that the ACTA protests set off quite a vivid debate in Poland and other Central and Eastern European states about what can happen with the communication and kind of general information space. And this, I hope, will reflect also in the kind of statements and bold political statements that can be made by the European institutions, because I think in many cases the Western European democracies are already like very far down in cowardice, that it becomes very difficult for me to, when I see colleagues, even colleagues that could technically think about political problems and realize that there is something wrong, but because they prefer positioning themselves inside of their political groups or inside of the system of their political parties, they prefer not to say or not to speak up where it matters. And it's very disheartening to see, and I've seen this very recently. And the only place where I can still believe that there are people who can see communication as a kind of useful tool to build communities and societies is actually the societies that came from a system which didn't allow free speech up until very, very recently in the 1980s. So I apologize very much for this dystopic view of the European Parliament. That said, I should say also that the European Parliament very much lacks detailed knowledge. So another one of my perceptions is that parliamentarians are very, very eager to listen to people who have a kind of uninformed view. Of course, many parliamentarians have already legal academics in their member states that they could have listened to for the last 20 years if they had wanted a conservative yet informed point of view. and they just haven't. And also there's this problem that even if you talk to people, and even if you can kind of see that they may be able to comprehend what you're saying, at the end of the day in the European Parliament, it's a lot about protecting your self-esteem and protecting your own kind of role as an MEP, and that makes it very difficult to incorporate the wisdom of other elected representatives, because ultimately, of course, the political leadership should emanate from you and not from somebody else. And whether or not the Pirate Party can change that, I don't know. Maybe if the Pirate Party is able to develop a kind of very precise set of skills that would be useful to introduce in the political debate, it would certainly make sense to raise these consistently during all of the political meetings in the European Parliament. And that needs to be done, and it's something that can only be done by an elected representative or a representative in a nationally elected institution. But then it becomes more a game of playing an expert in the institution rather than playing a representative of the people, because my experience of interacting with people who are outside of the parliament is that they are very rarely interested in interacting with you in a way that is relevant to you. Like, a voter is always interested in interacting with their publicly elected representative in a way that is relevant to them. So when I was doing three interviews this morning, for instance, everyone kept asking me about youth policy, and I said I would normally work with that because youth policy is not my political area. And they said, well, really, because all of the other publicly elected representatives have a problem or like have an opinion about that, which is kind of strange, because in the global economic European framework, actually European parliamentarians don't have a lot of influence over what will happen with a financial crisis. It's in the Council of Ministers. We work with all sorts of really detailed topics, but not with the financial crisis. So why would it be particularly relevant for a European parliamentarian to have a very detailed opinion about what should happen with this issue and not what should happen with the detailed issues that they care about? But I think both media and voters feel a lot happier when politicians generally address themselves in vague terms about big topics that feel relevant to the voters at this time, rather than the specifics of what the politician is asked to regulate. And this is kind of a problem with the voters. And I've been thinking about this in terms of liquid democracy that they're using in Germany. Also, I don't think that a liquid democracy system would necessarily solve that problem either, because you would end up having the same type of thing that the people who interact with that system, the kind of voter base or the member base, would also have some concerns which may not actually be particularly relevant for the publicly elected representative at that time. Then what do you do? I'm sorry, this is a very dystopic speech. You can ask me questions if you want. I have a lot of opinions also on the issues that I actually do work with. This is a picture of a vertebrate. It's the first animal with a spine known to come into existence in the late Cambrian. I found the picture on Wikipedia. In the institution where I work, I suspect that there are also kind of people who have spines and backbones and that do stand up maybe for issues, even if I don't notice it much in the field of policies that I'm working. And for reference, I can say also that even if I say that many politicians experience a lot of fear, I'm saying that also as it's including me. Because you can be very afraid of quoting the wrong number or giving the wrong fact, and you're very afraid also of what will happen with respect to interactions with voters. If you say that you don't have a particular standpoint on youth employment, what will happen to you, who will be angry with you, and this type of thing. So it's kind of like very central to the way that I perceive this institution. And I don't have any out-of-the-box solutions for this. And maybe this week also I'm particularly disheartened because I saw this week a colleague give up on a position that I think that he probably would have liked to maintain if he had been able to muster enough courage to navigate politically that kind of process. Sometimes also I get an inflated ego when somebody approves something that I suggested that I think is good. So it depends very much from day to day. Thank you.